Hello, everybody, and welcome back to. I don't even think I could have predicted how interesting and many different facets and turns this podcast episode is going to take. It's going to span the horizon on many different levels. And joining us today from a very interesting location, which you'll probably figure out why, is Seattle, Washington. Mr. Suzuki, how is it going?
It's going okay. You know, everyone up here is slightly distressed, but sure. Everyone's still hunkered down and working hard. And, you know, we're trying to keep it business as usual, but it is a little bit eerie, as I know probably it is for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, I consider our friends in the EU who are probably dealing with stuff. Mm-hmm. I know Asia is also considering some pretty crazy measures. So it's kind of an interesting time, you know, all the way around. But I don't think before we have been sort of at the sort of in our hemisphere, the epicenter of something like this.
Sure.
And so for that to be happening, and especially so close to our actual location, is really interesting. But, you know, everywhere you go, people are generally healthy and everyone's taking it seriously. So that's kind of the nice thing.
Yeah, that is the nice thing, is that people are taking this seriously, washing their hands, doing the best that they can. And as always, Microsoft, you know, virus related, non-virus related, has filled us with many topics this month, many topics. But first, we'll kick it off with just a little bit of news, mostly because this hits a little close to home because I love PowerShell. And I'm curious if you all use it. I'm sure you do to some extent. PowerShell 7 is now available, and it's not just available for Windows, also for our Mac and Linux friends can also go out and grab that scripting tool. But Aaron, I would imagine, use PowerShell at your office.
Impassioned PowerShell use to a wild extent. Exploit it for automation maximally.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found is in a lot of cases, it can start with less experienced IT people, or maybe sort of casual on the fringes IT people who want to start doing things, even like our business analyst has started doing some automation with it. And a lot of times we'll do some validation with Power BI, mm-hmm. and then that can flow into certain, you know, actual feature function aspects of the product. So there are all kinds of ways that we use it. So yes, this is a very positive development, and we will embrace it and look forward to exploring and discovering all the trimmings.
Yeah, so that is out. One of the big features, at least from people who were reading Petri over the past couple of weeks that we picked up on, is that there is significantly improved backwards compatibility with not necessarily PowerShell 6, but PowerShell 5 and earlier versions because of the .NET Core version that they moved to with PowerShell 7. So if you have some legacy scripts that you kind of just tucked away, you might want to pull them back out again if they're really valuable.
Yeah, and that's super, super important. And I'm glad that there was, I don't know if that was sort of just a de facto thing. Oh, it turns out it's backward compatible. I'm sure there was some effort to make that happen. And it's a very positive thing for people like us, because the biggest challenge, of course, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are the same way, where you do all this work and then the platform changes and you're either like, okay, we stay on the legacy stuff, which doesn't do as much, or we have to migrate all of our scripts that we spent months and months and months developing, and that's a whole project. You know, it's very nice when it can be sort of a, you know, an in-place upgrade, everything more or less still works, and you're migrating things over time and updating and upgrading things over time. That always goes much better, you know, more smoothly and is easier to digest, you know, organizationally. Because sometimes these things are sort of, you know, here and there type of use, right? If it's just for kind of break fix problems or, you know, changes that you want to implement just when users get into certain scenarios, for example, thinking about, you know, kind of end user IT things.
Yeah.
Or even server jobs, right? I mean, if there are certain things you want to do on a, you know, a server of some kind and use PowerShell to do some of those things, you know, it might not be an everyday kind of thing. It might be an occasional use thing. And so again, you want to get on latest, you want to capitalize on all the new capabilities, but you don't want to have to rewrite everything every time. So this is a positive thing.
Yep. One other, well, there's a couple bits of news. Microsoft also shipped the first update to the Windows 10X emulator. Nothing like crazy in there, but I just think it's more notable from the aspect that Microsoft isn't just putting this out there and saying, hey, we're going to keep a whole bunch of secrets for a long time. It appears, at least based on what they've shipped, that they plan to update this emulator pretty frequently, probably right up until release would be my guess.
Right, and it's a good indication of how seriously they're taking the dev ecosystem around 10X.
Yep.
Right, I mean, I think that's every bit as much the important implication here is that they're saying that the emulator environment, which is what people are going to use to dev their apps, has to be relevant to the way that 10X is actually going to work if we're going to have a decent app ecosystem on 10X, which clearly is going to be different enough from the way Win 10 works that they want people to cater to it. So I think this is a definite strong gesture that they are making investments and and mean for this to go well and mean for it to be a viable, long-term, sustainable platform. So I think for us, in the world that we live in with our product, it's, you know, a platform we need to take more seriously in terms of how we're going to entertain it and manage it potentially. Still a lot of questions for us, as there are for all of our customers and all of our listeners, but definitely the indication there is that this is going to be something that a lot of people are going to write apps to, and that a lot of then hopefully adoption happens. And if that happens, of course, it'll flow into the enterprise and it'll need to be managed, you know, professionally and all those things. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
It very much will be. It very will be, actually, just to kind of watch that play out and see what Microsoft does over the next coming weeks here. Other news, Microsoft also, which this is built into Windows 10 as Cortana, Microsoft announced that Cortana's consumer side is just kind of walking away. It looks like it's going to be all productivity based here and out, which, given that Microsoft doesn't have a mobile platform, I had actually heard at one point that Cortana usage on iOS and Android devices combined was less than 100,000 users. So seeing them do this, not a big surprise.
Yeah, kind of not surprising. And what war are we waging with Cortana, right? And what is the value of that to, you know, sort of the thick client that we all know and love and that most of us use, you know, 8 or 10 hours a day, say, all right, we'll call it six to seven hours a day. And the answer for me is very like zero. I don't use it. It's all but irrelevant. I move very, very quickly through my daily use apps and I am very high functioning with them. And I don't really instinctively think to use my voice to ask my computer questions, right? That's not a thing I would think to do, even though it's there kind of prompting me. Not really a thing I do.
Yep.
I'm sure that's probably true for a lot of other users, and the reason we're seeing it, I'm sure, being deprecated, sort of fading away.
Yep. Fully agree. I think it's. I actually heard that at one point, or not. That's incorrect to say. I've heard that at one point it was referred to internally as the Microsoft 365 Assistant. I don't know if they're going to rebrand Cortana that, but it kind of fits into, you know, the shift that we're seeing that's happening with it.
Yeah, maybe more. And is this another case of Clippy? Is this, you know, what exactly are we looking at here, right, in terms of what this is supposed to do? And it almost seems like factoring into Microsoft 365 is a step back and a move toward Clippy. I don't know. I'm not sure this is such a ubiquitous platform in terms of all of Microsoft 365 now and all of the apps. And the way that things have evolved that way have been very favorable. And obviously it's growing and doing extremely well. How much help does it really need from that kind of assistant? It seems like a improving search and improving, your text box search would be, and the problems that have been going on with that, right, would be a higher priority than addressing this.
Yep.
But I don't know, that's a little more armchair than, you know, sort of in the weeds, but
here is something that is extremely appropriate to you. I tried to install this as long as possible because right before we started recording, Aaron said that he had the KB number memorized. I don't know if he still does, but I figured I would call him out on it. But this month, well, maybe might even say the past couple months, actually, the KB, which is part of the Patch Tuesday that has gone out, has caused some havoc across the board. Microsoft has not been on their best behavior when shipping this stuff. But what are you hearing? What are you honestly seeing? Because you have better visibility into this than I personally do. So I'd be curious to see what you are seeing and hearing on your end.
Well, the biggest issue, of course, is the driver problems. Mm-hmm. And I believe it ends in 995 or 996, you know, the last Patch Tuesday update. And, you know, this inability to manually update drivers from within Windows. Literally, you're blocked. Mm-hmm. And so the update breaks some drivers, and then you're blocked from updating them. And so it's, well, what the heck do you do?
Yeah.
You know, and for us, this is a bit of, you know, a happy accident, because this is what we do. Like, our ability to automatically inject drivers and manage this and push them, you know, live or offline or whatever way and stage works best for IT and for the end user. So for us, this is sort of welcome news, but it's a problem, it's a disruption. And you know, another example of sort of the way that the Windows update model has been playing out with Windows 10 and the challenges associated with drivers and the implications for productivity and actually having a usable, you know, productivity machine. Mm-hmm. is sort of an affront to the very use of a computer. So for us, it's a bit of a head scratcher in terms of, you know, understanding why this is going on in the first place, but mm-hmm. there are ways to deal with it. You know, some sites and some blogs are saying, well, just uninstall, that problem goes away, that's fine. There are some non-trivial trade-offs with sure. that, right? There are some important fixes that are in this. You want to install it. Our own IT people were sending out emails saying, remember to install this one, everybody. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's importance to timeliness with this. But interestingly, it also left open a couple vulnerabilities. There's an SMB vulnerability, I think, that exists that wasn't fixed with this. Developers who are listening, there's the CodeSign tool that also breaks with this in Visual Studio, which is a very important function, especially in this day and age. So, you know, I guess in it, what I'm trying to say is, said another way, it's still Windows, and we're still running essentially the same process. And I don't necessarily want to poke the Windows team in the eye or mm-hmm. or the kind of sustained engineering group, because yes, these other issues have surfaced, but they've fixed how many existing problems, and yep. they're never going to get them all, and they've got to move quick to get the ones they got. So this is less a referendum on the teams and the hard work that's being done, and more a referendum on sort of how are a couple of these fundamentals being missed. And how is communication being managed around the vulnerabilities that are being left open, mm-hmm. right? And the messaging around, and it's never going to be great, because these are very, very large organizations. The support organization, the Windows organization, are like on different planets. They don't work in the same building. A lot of times they're probably not even in the same location, meaning they're in a different city.
Yeah.
So, or a country for that matter. So it's hard to reconcile a lot of this when you're dealing with a product as large and complex as this. Nevertheless, it leaves a lot to be desired, and it poses a lot of challenges for the IT pro, right?
Mm-hmm. It really does. Yeah, there was actually, I think you hinted at it, there was a vulnerability, I believe, related to SMB 3. I don't know if Microsoft published, I think it was Microsoft or one of their partners, or somebody published a document about it and then quickly retracted it, because Microsoft didn't actually patch it this time around. And so it's a dangerous place when that sort of stuff goes out. So
yeah, and that one, sort of the SMB one's interesting because it's used a lot, right? Yep. SMB is in fairly maybe not ubiquitous, but common use.
Yes.
And the vulnerability is such that you can do the server side hack relatively easily, and then you have to kind of trick the end user mm-hmm. into welcoming it onto the endpoint, into the PC endpoint. But we know that with all of the kind of spearfishing attacks and, go buy me a bunch of Steam gift cards or whatever. This is a common exploit, and there are ways to accomplish that. So I'd like to trivialize it, but that is definitely a non-trivial one. And the way that it happened was unfortunate, where indeed someone, I couldn't quite decipher. It sounded like your perception, Brad, was that it came from like a blogger or someone said that this vulnerability existed. I thought maybe even Microsoft themselves through
It
a
may have
blog
been
said
them.
that this vulnerability existed, and they didn't want that to be out there, so they quickly took it down. But in any case, there is this very tricky dance going on. We're living in the world that we are, and this is how things are. And this is our future. And so we have to be smart and selective about the steps that we're taking to do this. I'm increasingly more bullish on installing all the updates and knowing that part of what we pay for when we subscribe to Microsoft services and buy Microsoft products is the hundreds of thousands of engineers that they have globally, whose job it is to keep pace with this. So I'm comfortable keeping my bet there. We're seeing similar threats now moving on to other platforms, Chrome and other things. So that this whole notion that these alternative platforms are safer, it is not necessarily true anymore. I still feel really comfortable with the bet we have and the ecosystem that all of us have built around our Windows networks, and really our kind of pluralistic networks that include, Mac OS and iOS and Android and Chrome. So it's really about putting the business first and what's going to be in the best interest of the business, and keeping that the focus and the priority, and normalizing around what the risk is of some of these vulnerabilities that exist beyond sort of the patch horizon of the month, right? It's kind of hard to say that out loud, but unfortunately, I think that's reality.
No, I think you're spot on. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Patch Tuesday next month to see, because everybody's going to be looking now for these vulnerabilities that were quasi-disclosed somehow, to see whether or not they get patched. And if they don't, then that's going to raise a lot more alarm. So
Right,
it'll be interesting.
exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's still lingering, and what is the guidance? Is it roll back? And then what about the other stuff that did get patched, and this and that? And so much of the time, some of these patches, everyone's excited about volume controls, and it's like, that great, that's fine, but for most of us that have to do real work, audio is the least of our concerns, right? I mean, I'll run it off my phone or something, or heck, turn on the actual radio. But yeah, I think that there's a lot for those of us in the world of IT to really be preoccupied with that really matters, that's going on.
For sure. And then here is the big question du jour. The big one is Microsoft has a big conference coming up in Seattle, late May. Now, we've already seen GDC, which is the Game Developer Conference, canceled. They had just announced that E3, which takes place in June, is canceled. Google's I/O, which takes place around the time of Build, has been canceled. Microsoft hasn't said anything. What is, do you think Microsoft is going to have Build, or do you think they are going to cancel it as well?
I give it a better than 50% chance of being canceled. And the reason why is it seems that the continent of North America, and we were seeing it in other continents as well, right? Things are evolving very quickly in the EU, parts of Asia. There is a very good response going on. I think Microsoft should be applauded for the way that they have responded with their employees and moving very quickly and aggressively on their policies, being very progressive with that. I think because Build is such a large and strategic event, and it has so much to do with keeping the business going, that it's going to be really hard for them to do, but I think ultimately they will. And I think part of the reason that it may go that way is I think that we're going to see more coming down from the state of Washington's government that says no public events.
Yeah.
The question is time frame and the time horizon, right? Builds in May, isn't it?
Yep.
So, you know, are things going to be mellow by then? Or there are a lot of discussions happening right now of this social distancing. Everyone's talking about social distancing and some of these other strategies and techniques. What they're saying is that all that does is really prevent this from spiking and then declining and turns it into more of a longer arc. Like a less sharp rise, but then it kind of protracts that time frame.
Sure.
So is that better or is that worse is sort of what I've been asking myself. From a business impact perspective, I think it may make it worse. From a healthcare and a caring for citizens and reducing the death toll, obviously makes it better because there are only so many hospital beds. There's only so much capacity to contain this in, you know, sort of the way that our world works, which is different than the way China works, which is the way that different than, you know, Italy works, different than the way Singapore works. So we're working with in the bounds of our government, our culture, and sort of what is socially acceptable. And those norms are being challenged and changed every day. But I think that we're going to see things really slow down, and I don't want to be doomsday or make listeners who maybe have you know, bought tickets and are committed to going, you know, kind of backpedal and impact things, and all of a sudden it's on and I was completely wrong. And but it certainly seems to be going that way. The threat is because of what we saw in China, and we were able to kind of be preemptive and everyone loaded up on, you know, hygiene products, and everyone's taking that very seriously. A lot of people avoiding physical contact and kind of going for the, you know, forearm bump, not even not even the knuckle bash, and or you know, any contact at all. It's changing everything, and it makes me wonder too how permanent this change might become in our society and in civilization in general. It's a very interesting time that way.
But I think
Build, it's definitely going to impact things. And, you know, we're thinking about it in that context too, of what the implications are for our business. I think that the positive side of all this, the silver lining is for IT, it's time to shine. Right. Sure. There's never been a better opportunity for IT to say, we have prepared for this day for the last decade.
Yep.
And now it has to be everyone remote and we're fully prepared.
Yep.
Right. Cloud services are pumping, data centers pumping, end user devices all set up for remote work. Mm-hmm. We've got our, you know, Skype or Teams or whatever are the services are that we use for meetings and collaboration. On and on and on and on and on, right? I mean, and for us, that's certainly something that we're celebrating, is our disaster plan is in motion and we're executing to that end. The downside and I guess the anxieties around some of these open questions of, do we still show up or not?
Right. Yeah, it's
so
interesting.
What do you think? What's your bet, Brad?
So I'm in the same camp. See, the challenge I think here, and what you hit on was right, is that this is 6 weeks, something like that away, something give or take. It could be that, you know, in Seattle area, it's all nice and cleaned out and everything's starting to return to normal. And this would be a great like motivator saying, look, life is back. The challenge here is the impacts that you have seen now for probably 2-3 weeks, something like that, is just now starting to hit the West Coast. And actually in Cincinnati as well, we're starting to see universities close and all that. So what the you know, the pessimist side is that, hey, Seattle gets it all cleared out, then they have Build, and then every other area that's still impacted is now flying to Seattle, and it's just creating a vicious cycle of, hey, we had this under control, now here's 30,000 people, 100 of them are infected, and now we're right back to where we started.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, but what are our alternatives?
Right.
And I mean, what's Microsoft to do? You know, and we, in our, you know, overly collaborative technology circles, are talking to you know, all the other major software manufacturers and hardware manufacturers, and they're grappling with the same concerns and the same challenges. You know, we've had meetings with OEMs that have been canceled. We've had, you know, you know, just as you pointed out, all these other events are being canceled. Extremely large, extremely high profile events, South by Southwest, Coachella. Yep. I mean, these are more consumer kind of events, but nevertheless, like any of that congregating masses of humanity is, you know, just a breeding ground for this. And, you know, what's the right way? And yep. You know, I don't know. I don't know what to do other than what everyone is doing. Yep. You know,
I bet we see Microsoft not cancel it, but turn it into like what they're doing with their MVP summit. They're planning out how to stream all this
virtual events.
I mean, that's sort of Microsoft's bread and butter, right? They know how to. They are the remote work productivity company. Like this is like their specialty is deliver productivity no matter where you are. They've been preaching that, like you said, to the IT people for years. Hey, you can work anywhere on any device. Well, here we go, Microsoft. Make your conference do that too.
So. Right. There's never been a better opportunity for Microsoft to jump up and down and turn, you know, these lemons into lemonade.
Yep.
And start putting out all the facts about, you know, all the usage that happened and the productivity that was unleashed and, you know, teams discovering ways to do more together online that's turning into all these other upsides. So, and I'm sure we'll see lots of that. And, you know, for their part, they've been doing that themselves. There's some public blogs from their team in China talking about the way they got through it. And they use that as a model for their North American workforce who, you know, at least in the Puget Sound here, in Washington was told to not come in unless it's a necessity for your job. So it has made all of Seattle and especially the East Side truly a ghost town. It is, again, bizarre. The commute, you know, having been so much easier has been a relief for those of us who are electing to continue to come in or who need to come in. Mm-hmm. But it's a little bit of a little gallows humor, I suppose, on the upside of that.
Yep. So we will see. We'll be checking back in here in a couple weeks with you to see how things go along. Hopefully for the better, right? I hope next time we check in and be like, you know what? We were a little overblown. It's all fine. And everything goes on. Let's just be optimistic.
Yeah, I'm super eager. You know, the great thing is we have this nice cadence with this podcast where we'll be able to revisit this.
Yeah,
exactly. At sort of another like point in time, and it's a chunk out. So I'm with you, Brad. I really hope that we're singing a different song and seeing the market behave differently.
Yeah, that too.
And seeing business behave differently. And, you know, I'm just very hopeful that, especially for the small businesses, small consumer businesses, that we see them do well and see a lot of them pull through, because I think that's where the real risk is, especially in our local economies. And then will that spiral up, right? Will that kind of turn into something bigger? And that's what I hope we really avoid is sort of this bottom falling out as opposed to the top crumbling as it did in the financial crisis, right? This is sort of the inverse risk maybe that we're witnessing here. So yeah, we'll see. Fingers crossed.
We will see. We're going to be optimistic and say next time we'll chat will be great. But we very much appreciate you taking time out of your busy day today, Mr. Aaron. To everybody else, you can find more information about this podcast and what Aaron's doing in the blog post. And if nothing else, we'll catch all of you right back here next time.